ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hello everybody, welcome to the Attention Please podcast, now on video. If you like this podcast, kindly like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. So today we have a very special guest on the podcast, and it's Vasan Bala. And we will be talking about Cinema Marte Dam Tak. Now, a lot of you have sent me, when this was still being promoted, you've sent me this, like, have you seen this or will you see this? At least close to 15 to 20 people. And that's because most of you know that I love B grade, C grade, or whatever you want to call them, Hindi movies. I've written a book on it many years ago called May I Have Your Attention, Please. That's what this podcast is named after. And so, of course, I watched this TV series with a great bit of interest. And the briefest review that I can give for it, it was way better than what I thought it would be. I thought that there was nothing that's going to surprise me. I know all of this. And wow, was I surprised. There was virtually nothing I knew about this going in. So I thought that I need to talk to Vasan about this. So thank you for coming on the show, Vasan.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So by the way, just before we start, I wanted to talk about Monica, Oh My Darling, which I also love, but let's just focus today on Cinema Marte Dam Tak. So the first question that I had for you was that, why did you title it Cinema Marte Dam Tak after a lesser known Mehul Kumar movie? I mean, he would go on to make Tiranga and Krantiveer after this, but you chose this name. What was the significance of this name? Is there any?
So I had written something as a feature film, which I wanted to call it Marte Dam Tak. It was a very pulpy take on the life of Ashwatthama, or the legend of Ashwatthama, as you call it, and wanted to make it in a very pulpy kind of a way about a Chiranjeevi or a guy who won't die. But like a Logan, like Logan.
Okay.
So which is why Marte Dam Tak. So that title kind of stuck in my head, but that project never happened. It never went ahead. But when this was happening, there was always this conversation around how do we position the show, like call it B grade, call it C grade. And that was always the uncomfortable position to take. And I was really sure that because the perspective with which we're seeing all these people was with a very non-judgmental look, as in we're not pouring in our judgment, and they can represent themselves. Like that was the idea. So we wanted it to be under the larger umbrella of cinema, and the fact that, you know, somehow we are stuck with it, and this is going to be with us till our last breath.
Okay.
So, you know, all that kind of encapsulated in the title. And also we kind of managed to keep the dignity of or not really categorizing anyone, because I think B grade is a classist kind of a gaze in that sense, as in, oh, mere hisab se B grade. So we didn't want to really take that position. So which is why this seemed like the most apt title to come up with.
Great. So when I first looked at the concept, I realized what the concept was. I anticipated it to be a kind of a documentary on the whole genre. Maybe start with Ramsey Brothers, with some anecdotes, maybe some funny clips. And I was expecting that when I went in, and it was not that. And I really liked the creative choices that you took. I think it worked much better the way it was, where you follow these, you know, four very different people doing, you know, similar kind of cinema. And it was great because these four people were very interesting people, all of them. I mean, honestly, I didn't know anybody here other than Kishan Shah.
Right.
And not because of him, because of his brother.
Exactly.
So these were fairly new names. I thought that you were going to go with the more conventional ones, like, let's say, Harinam Singh. Again, not a lot of people know Harinam Singh, but he's...
But we did want to.
Okay, so why? So tell us a little bit about why this format, and why was I missing some of the names that I was expecting to see?
Yeah, so as in, you know, the way these kind of films are made, actually any kind of films are made, you go in with a certain grand plan, and then everything is a slave to your circumstances, right? For some, the circumstances could be 50 crores, some the circumstances could be 100, but you're always falling short of funds. Mm-hmm. You'll never really have the, you're never really working at proper resource capacity. So, which is also similar to every kind of film. So with us as well, even while we were making the documentary, obviously we had a wish list, but then some people have sold their own life rights to other people. Some people want to maybe withhold and keep it for something else. Like Harinam Singh had sold his life rights to someone else, so he couldn't be a part of our show. So what I really like through this process is, you know, it just goes through its very natural process of elimination and acceptance. And which is how even these films were being made, right? Aaj paise nahi hai, theek hai, safed diwar hai, isme char scene shoot kar lo. And that's how we went ahead with our documentary as well, or our series rather as well, that, you know, we had a grand list of many people, and then they just kept on eliminating and adding all by themselves. So whoever was available came in, and that became the texture and the tone of the show. Or the life of the show. Because the larger idea was to capture the subsect of this industry rather than just the people. So when we're talking about the world, it was a lot more accommodating. And we weren't really pushed into a corner with, oh, you know, we really would have wanted Harinam, but Harinam is not available. Now, you know, what do we do? So those choices became very easy because the view was always a very macro view through these personal lives. So it didn't bother about the star value, if you can call it.
Which brings me to, maybe I think I know what the answer is, but I'm still going to ask it. So since I'm wearing a Gunda t-shirt, one of the things that I noticed wasn't present in this documentary was
right.
Mention of Gunda. You had a lot of footage from Loha, but Loha, not even yes. One from Gunda. And to the extent that I felt it was almost deliberate. So why wasn't Gunda even mentioned in...
Because no one knew who owns the rights
to Gunda.
So to show the audiovisuals, because all of these people, you know, they have sold their negative rights. So most of them don't own their own films. So which is a tragic scene in that sense. And then there is always a due chain of event that happens around who it was sold, and then further on the hands that kind of exchanged. So it's always a really long, frustrating trail. So which is why a lot of films got missed out. And, you know, we also were fighting our own budget issues. And we had a budget for only a select few clips or films. So we also were operating within that. And within that, we kind of made our own choices.
Okay. So just so that Gunda fans who, and I'm one of them, of course, is that Kanti Shah doesn't own the rights to Gunda. It's like Maruti Films is at least the name comes out in the title. So
yeah.
Aren't they the same guys for Loha, or is this separate?
So it was separate for Loha.
Okay.
But also, in a way, it kind of worked for me when I was watching, is that, you know, you have your biggest asset and you're thinking it's going to come, but it never came. But then the maker came. So I think in a way it is the tease that even they were playing on, right? So it's like a show and tell, but you don't know if, but you know subconsciously it is Gunda, right? The one that kind of kicked open the doors or the floodgates for people to kind of explore more into this section of the industry. So I think it paid off as a bigger tease in that sense.
That's right. I was absolutely expecting maybe at the finale it will be Gunda something, but it wasn't there. So no.
Then we had Harish Patel and Mukesh, and
yes.
Harish Patel kind of said his line.
Yes, he did. That's true. I always find it inspirational that Harish Patel went from Gunda straight to
Eternals.
So
absolutely.
You're sharing screen space with Salma Hayek and Angelina Jolie, and you're sharing screen space with the character. So this is amazing. So here's a question that I had, and I don't know if you found out the answer to it or you've been asked since Loha was on the table, was why are there two movies in Loha and why don't they ever connect up? What's the story behind that?
So I don't know. So the first time when I got to know that there were two Lohas with Dharmender was when I was in college, and we were discussing about movies, and we eventually came to Loha, I was talking about certain scenes. My friend was talking about certain scenes and they didn't match. And that is when I first in my life realized that there were two Lohas.
There are not only two Lohas, but even within the Kanti Shah's Loha, there is the fact with Govinda and Monisha Koirala, right? Which has got nothing to do with the main movie. And they never even come together in one scene.
Yeah. Which is why it happens. Like, you know, you get the dates. See, earlier what used to happen was the films used to be made in a very piecemeal kind of a fashion. So somehow you put a film together, maybe shoot a couple of scenes, then put a poster out with a title which is catchy enough for the distributors to kind of get. So then all these actors got a lot of advances. And in a way, because the industry was so emotional, they kind of would hold on to these advances, even, but say, if you had given someone a lakh in 1983, and even if the producer went to the same actor in 1993, the actor will actually consider the offer because he'd taken an advance. Okay. And this is right across. And this was like a norm of all the old timers, because I know this myself. Is when I was making this short film, it never got made with Mr. Sunil Bora. And Mr. Sunil Bora, father and grandfather were like filmmakers. I mean, I think the Bora brothers, they formed this company in probably the 40s. And they made a lot of Dara Singh films as well. In the short film, I wanted to cast Jackie Shroff. And Sunil Bora says, you know, way back in the early 90s, I had given him an advance for some film. So maybe just tell him that and see, look for a narration. And he remembered Jackie Shroff. He said, yes, I had taken an advance. So please come and please narrate the film to me. So, you know, a commitment that was made 30 years ago probably wouldn't have cost that much money. But then all these actors, it was an unsaid rule that you kind of fulfill that.
Okay.
Because, you know, in those days, the producers would kind of be all in, right, with their personal wealth. So I think the talent also kind of respected that transaction. And without paperwork, they would own up to it. Like, yes, I got an advance and the time didn't matter. So it's pretty incredible how the industry operated. So which is how what would have happened was Govinda would have taken some advance. Manisha Gura would have taken some advance. They would have shot with them. Then maybe the storyline would have become something else.
Okay.
But then to sell the film to the distributor, you need three big names. So they would have put them on the poster and just to get the people in. And once the people are in, they're in, right? The ticket has been sold.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Because I just wondered why they even tried to join them together. I don't know.
But which is what they used to do with Bruce Lee films, right? After Bruce Lee died, they would always claim that this is the last Bruce Lee film. And they would just put anyone and shoot. Because once the ticket is sold, it doesn't matter what is playing on the screen. You know, you've already made your sale.
Man, so, this is pre-Twitter days where you can't
absolutely.
People. So the other for me, the best part of the movie, the best part of the TV series, not movie, was the end of it actually. Because I felt it was very poignant. And it was very poignant because of they get their place in the sun, as they say, you know, they get a real premiere. And then each of the four directors kind of celebrate in their own way. And what I really liked was it kind of reflected their personality. You know, there's this one guy who spouts Kurosawa. I thought that was hilarious. That was like the highlight for me in terms of the funnies when he started talking about Kurosawa. But I thought that was very well done. And I really liked that part. But tell me a little bit about perhaps what was the most shocking thing for me, which was Kanti Shah versus the rest. I had no idea that there was something like this. And, you know, I felt bad, you know, when Kanti Shah says, you know, that nobody, you know, I'm kind of, nobody talks to me here in the industry. So what was that about? And I never really understood why they were so against him.
So, in a way, what happened was obviously he was the most successful name. And also, yes, it was true that his films earned a lot more than his contemporaries at his time. Mm-hmm. So he set his own rules and kind of became the industry on his own. And obviously it is lonely at the top, right? And once you're there and once everyone else has to play by the rules that he has set up, then it becomes a very different playing ground. And the moment he came in, because of his business acumen or his talent, you know, he kind of changed the structure for his comfort. So his success kind of alienated him in a way. And also with success comes insecurity, arrogance, megalomania, narcissism, so many things, right? And your own insecurities about where you land, where you are, where you are not. So yeah, it's a very complicated thing, yeah. So there is no one incident or one word to kind of, or one sentence to describe this. But definitely, he was miles ahead in terms of revenue and credibility and as a name. Sure. Ahead of anyone. His name sold territories. So obviously, when you have that kind of a clout, you know, some could take inspiration, a lot could probably not like the clout for only one person. So yeah, it is so many things that comes with stardom, fame and power. And especially when one could control the industry in a way, then obviously then, you know, it becomes a difficult relationship with others who probably don't have that sort of control.
So tell me a little bit about Jane Elam. Out of all the four, that was the most surprising and most amazing. You normally don't think of that kind of an industry is so obviously so male dominated. You have a director. So how did you, because I've never heard of her before. So right. Tell me a little bit about, you know, her and, you know, how she became part of this project.
So all credit to Pritesh, who was our research head, Pritesh Srivastava. So he kind of knew everyone in this industry. He had a great network into it, and he kind of built up bridges for them. And before I came in, there was already like a 2-minute kind of a trailer put together by Vice on like camcorder and phone footages. And one of the people in that footage I saw was Jane Elam. Mm-hmm. And I think she was sitting in some bar, and it was day, and she'd already started drinking. And the way she spoke was left an incredible impact. And I think that day itself, it was sure that she has to be a part of the show. Mm-hmm. And come what may, because her arc seemed like will be the most interesting. And the way she conducts herself with dignity and pride, and the way she's made an ecosystem around her, wherein it's not just her, but she supports new people who come to Bombay, make sure they have some place to stay.
Yes.
So she has this huge extended family that rallies around her, and she obviously supports them as well. So she seemed like this great matriarchal figure who kind of survived in this kind of an industry and also made a name for herself and still relevant, even if not as a filmmaker, then as an actor and someone in the within the community who is, you know, taking care of other people. Maybe she's doing what she probably never had, right. and which really seemed quite an incredible thing to do. So that within that those 2 minutes where Jane Elam came and spoke, I mean, she just created an incredible impact in the entire team.
And I always saw her in at least in this documentary. And
she had to be a
polar opposite to Kanti Shah, right? Because Kanti Shah, it seemed to be somebody who's obviously very successful in that context, but kind of pushed people away, or, you know, whatever it is, wherever it came from, he was obviously, he had done that. And on the other hand, Jane Elam hadn't. So she was very well liked, it seemed like. A lot of people really liked her, even though she was not, right. not that successful. So again, I really enjoyed that, those subtexts. There was things which I was not expecting to see in this documentary, but there was a lot of cinema there too, in right. the cinema Marte Dam Tak, which kind of comes through, which is why I loved it. So the last question that I want to ask you is, where can we see these movies?
Yes, so these movies should be out. What is happening is, because within the series, we have shown a lot of people watching the film in a cinema hall. Mm. So then by virtue of that, all these films need to go through the CBFC scanner.
Okay.
So they have gone through, we've got the cuts, we're working on the cuts, but there is, I think, a shift in the management that is happening. And because of the shift, there are some delays in certification. So once we sort those things out, all these films will be out there for okay. people to watch.
Okay.
So they have to.
Yes. Yeah. So like, where are these movies? We want to see them.
Exactly.
Will there be a season 2 of this? Because this is definitely worth revisiting.
So we are discussing, but once probably this, all of this settles down, we put all these 4 films out, then maybe we'll regroup and understand what the journey ahead is.
Wait, yeah, I'm eagerly waiting for a season two. I really like to see more work on this, and I thought it was very well done. So thanks a lot, Vasan, for making the time out from your busy schedule to talk about this topic, which those of my listeners, I keep on saying readers, know how passionate I am about this topic. And for those of you who have read Mihap and my book and who've seen this, you know that 10 years ago, I talked about, like, when you go to the movie theater, they put in scenes from other movies and they punch it in the projector and they say, play that again. And, you know, I've gone and seen this actually in these cinema theaters. So it was great to see, you know, that secret world that right. pretty much a lot of people experience, but nobody talks about, kind of brought to screen. I kind of brought it in my book. And many people actually wrote to me saying they felt they were the only guys who were doing this. Nobody else was, but everybody else was. But thanks a lot for being on this show and, you know, looking forward to, do you want to, I know there's a lot of studio embargoes and stuff, but is there any new project? Because I'm really looking forward to any new project that you have coming up. So if you want to talk about, please love to hear about it.
There are a couple of things that I'm still ideating. I think two ideas that hopefully, you know, are forming like stories that I want to make. So probably I'll know in a couple of weeks, where is it headed?
Okay, great. I'm really looking forward to what you will be doing.
Me too. I mean, I'm eagerly waiting to just see where I can dive in completely.
All right. So thank you, everybody, for joining, and I'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Thank you.